Today's show is brought to you by TheBeehive.com. That's TheBeehive.com. You can watch all of this show, the entirety of the show on TheBeehive.com. You can watch the various segments. There's also like exclusive videos on there.
Yes.
Exclusives.
Here's the best part. Before the show begins, you get to watch us for like 40 seconds. We just sit there. Sometimes we start the show and then we go, no, hold on. Let's wait a second. Let's start it again. You get to even watch that. Then post show, as soon as it finishes, you go, thank you, everybody. You mean so much to me. I love you all like brothers and sisters. That's today in the Beehive. And then we do like stretches and stuff.
Yeah.
And you get to see that as music plays. Those are the two areas that I think hold the most value that you're not going to get just, you know, listening to it on a podcast or just viewing the meat of the matter, if you will.
Meat. Oh, meat. Speaking of meat, go buy a Traeger grill.
Good segue. That's the kind of stuff I expect out of you on a Thursday.
Speaking of meat, go buy a Traeger grill. Go to TheBeehive.com. Watch this show.
Yeah.
You can watch it. The best way to watch it is at TheBeehive.com, although we stream everywhere. And now, let's beehive. You are looking alive on a Thursday. Boys at Thursday, boy, are you alive. My name is Clint Betts.
My name is Chris Rawl.
A lot of things going on in the world today, but the biggest thing going on is the Jazz got screwed last night, and I will say screwed.
Okay, don't say anything about that. I got a lot in my segment. I'm glad that we planned about this before the show began.
The Jazz
just stop
got screwed.
Right there. Just stop right there.
The Jazz got
You don't
screwed.
Need to continue. We'll talk about it in its due time.
The Jazz got screwed.
The Jazz got screwed. Great. So the first part of No Baller, here's a quick tease, you know, in two segments. We have a sports segment that I usually oversee. Today you've kind of gone off the rails a little bit.
I'm not going to let you talk about
it. And are trying to jump over it. First half about it is going to be about that. So I'll solicit your opinion there.
And we also talked to a musician today.
No, you can talk about that one.
An actual musician, Nick Anderson.
This show would be cool if I was just like trying to stop you from saying everything. I'm excited to hear about this. So I wasn't here for you conducted the interview.
Yeah, he
plays some songs I hear. I wasn't around for it. I'm excited to see that.
Nick Anderson, the first musician to come in live and play a song. First, but certainly not the last. You're going to hear him. I talked to him. Spanish Fork guy. You're wearing the Spanish Fork Don's t-shirt right now.
Mm-hmm.
How cool is that?
It's Don's life, dude.
We got Nick Anderson coming up, but before all of that, let's go and get a sense for what's going on in the Beehive today with Today in the Beehive. But first, a word from our sponsor. A lawsuit says hammering nails into a wall of this Utah house could be deadly. This is Pat Reavy from the Deseret News. If you hammer nails into the wall of this Utah house, you could die. Calling it a literal minefield and a public nuisance, South Jordan officials have filed a civil lawsuit in an effort to take control of a house where highly explosive materials were discovered so that it can be razed. R-A-Z-E-D.
This is why I've never gotten into house building, honestly. In the back of my mind, I knew stuff like this was possible. I didn't know when it would flare its ugly head, but I knew if I got into the construction world and I started hammering away, there's a decent chance you'd just
Game
die.
Over.
Just, oh, I'm nailing a 2x4, need a stud in the wall. Bam!
Over.
Gonzo.
The McManigle house is and will remain a literal minefield until the structure is demolished, the city says in a civil lawsuit filed Tuesday. There is no safe way to locate and neutralize the highly explosive and unstable materials that may still exist inside the McManigle house.
Why do you keep saying the McManigle house like everybody knows what that is?
That's
what
the McManigle. You haven't seen the McManigle? McManigle?
Are McManigles people?
McManigle?
What is that? Are you saying
it's
it right?
It's the McManigle house.
What is that? I don't
it's
know.
It's the McManigle house. I don't know how else to say it.
So you don't know what it is, okay.
I don't know how else to say it.
Is this a person's house, or is this like a museum to World War II and they put mines into
this
it?
This is a person's house.
So a person stockpiled a bunch of mines in their house, but in the walls. For reasons we don't fully know so far. I'm sure Pat Reavy might get to the bottom of it by the end of the article. Probably not.
I'm confident he does. He's the best journalist in the state.
Well, he is the best journalist in the state, but I'm not confident that he does because it sounds like an unanswerable question. If I went to you and said, Clint, why did you put a bunch of mines into the wall of your home that you live in? You'd be like, yeah, when I hear it out loud, I understand it.
Ryan McManigle, 43, currently faces felony charges in two cases, including multiple counts of attempted aggravated murder and possessing a weapon of mass destruction following several incidents last summer. Basically, they found partially made bombs and approximately 20 pounds of highly explosive materials in McManigle's house.
Imagine being a neighbor there, man. That's living your life on pins and needles.
That's pins and needles.
If your next door neighbor is stockpiled with a bunch of mines, you're like, maybe I'm going to spend a little more time at work. I should probably pick up some outside the home hobbies. Like, I don't want to be, you can't sit at home watching Netflix and just chill out. You know, the old proverbial Netflix and chill. You're sitting there going like, am I going to go up and smoke?
Not if you're by the McManigle house.
You can't watch a nice Netflix special by the McManigle house.
If you're by the McManigle house, you're not getting a good
night's
sleep.
That since I moved to Utah. I go, you can
stay
relax.
Stay away from the McManigles.
You can relax a lot here, but not by the McManigles.
This next story comes from the St. George News. Clint Reed. Chris Reed, actually. For some reason, I thought it was my name, and it's in fact your name.
Seems like there's something subliminal going on in your mind there, but whatever.
So Chris. No, that couldn't be Chris. It's Clint. Yeah, sure.
Chris Reed from the St. George News says a retired Olympian has carved Mount Rushmore into a mesquite bluff.
A retired Olympian?
A retired Olympian carves Mount Rushmore into mesquite bluff. This is what he says. He says, it is an unmistakable sight for any American. That's the start.
I'll bet a bunch of baby Americans would mistake it because they don't know what it is.
The heads of Mount Rushmore with the faces of four American presidents looking down upon Lower Flat Top Drive in Mesquite, Nevada.
I love the idea that I'm going to Mesquite, which I like. It's a great place to go. But you only go to Mesquite for two things. It's to either play $1 blackjack at the Virgin River, or you go and golf at a golf course. And you're like driving down there and you go, what's the one thing I need to spice things up? You look over to some bluff and you go, I'd recognize that site anywhere. The miniature Mount Rushmore, carved by an Olympian apparently.
Yeah, he carved it really good. This Mount Rushmore, with heads just a little larger than the typical human head.
That's not impressive.
Does not come close to matching the size of the monument in South Dakota, where George Washington's nose alone is 20 feet tall. Bet you didn't know that. And this soft-packed sandstone will not have the durability of the real monument's Black Hills granite.
I'm not that impressed. So he's just a sculptor. Mm-hmm. You know, this was advertised as a replica of Mount Rushmore, which in my mind means similar in scale, but just a statue or a head statue, as I call them, of four different presidents in a row.
Yeah, four head statues.
Four head statues. That's not that impressive to me. I don't even care if you're an Olympian or an ex-Olympian.
But that hasn't stopped onlookers from stopping on the road leading from Pioneer Boulevard to Sun City Retirement Community to get a good look at the creation of a 75-year-old retiree.
Why are people stopping? Why are they stopping? Would that catch your eye? If you're cruising around town or walking around town and you saw a sculpture of four different heads, first of all, you couldn't tell that it's a replica of Mount Rushmore unless you were standing next to it. You would stop. Okay.
Yeah, I'd be really excited.
I would not be that excited.
Ooh.
But I also, I've never
you
been.
You don't read biographies.
Well, I don't read biographies.
This is a good discussion point. Hey, look at this head. Let me tell you about Thomas Jefferson. Interesting fella.
This
and
is
then
a,
I go off.
Yeah, that's also why I wouldn't stop, is because if you stop by it, you have to listen to people like that. You don't stop by a replica of Mount Rushmore and everybody's just chilling, goes, oh, that's pretty cool. And then you move along. There's always some doofus like you, or multiple, and they go, no, you probably don't know this about George Washington, but the actual sculpture at Mount Rushmore, his nose is 20 feet. You probably don't know that, do you?
You probably didn't know he lost more battles than he won in the Revolutionary War, but what makes that interesting is he knew when to retreat. And that's fascinating.
He lost all the battles but won the war. It's just kind of, it's something that makes you think.
This guy's name is Pete Carnes, and he spent 40 hours, 3 or 4 days each week over the last few weeks on the project. and as of Friday, expected to spend about 10 more hours as he's putting the finishing touches on the familiar faces of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and it actually stops there. It doesn't name the other two.
Well, yeah, they don't know who's there. They need to spend more time around these Mount Rushmore people who are giving stats.
I'd be happy to talk to this, Chris Reed.
This is kind of a hot take. This is kind of a hot take, but I don't think Mount Rushmore sounds that cool. I've never been there, okay? Mm-hmm. And the idea of me going and just looking at these giant heads that are carved into rock, I don't know how fun that sounds, right? Yeah.
Where do I point?
What are you doing? Why are you showing? Who are you showing that to?
Look at that. That's a picture. That's old Pete.
You who have printed off sheets of paper in front of you.
There it is.
You found a photograph that's like maybe 6 inches by 10 inches. If that, you've been holding it up just randomly. You're pointing it who knows where. I can't make sense of who you were pointing that to or what the purpose
Let's
was.
Let's try this camera.
Why are we even talking? Why are we even doing that?
Oh, there we go. That's a good one. There you go. You see that? Does the audience see it?
Put the paper down. We have 480-inch television screens. We have a technology platform that you can put any picture on immediately in place of us. And the best route that we chose to show off this guy sculpting head-sized replicas of Mount Rushmore is to print it off in black and white on a normal sheet of paper. It doesn't even take up the full sheet of paper. It's maybe 1/4 of the paper. And you hold it up to a camera that is not zooming in.
Take it.
Camera is so far away from being able
to
discern what that
is. Can you see old Pete? That's Pete. Oh, man. Good guy. Well done, Pete. That's awesome.
No, you got to tell me this, though, because you like history more than me. I don't know if you've been to Mount Rushmore. Does Mount Rushmore actually sound like an intriguing place to go? You just go and you stand.
I've been to Mount
Rushmore. Okay, so is it an intriguing place
no.
to go? Okay. There, you just go and then you go, well, we trekked across half the United States to be in this state that has nothing else. And now we're going to go home.
Yeah, it's not that cool.
It reminds me a lot of
Teddy Roosevelt. When he was president, he was like, you know what? This is dumb. I'm leaving. And he got lost in Yellowstone for months.
Oh, yeah. You told me that one.
How cool is that?
Going back to the old Teddy well. It's pretty cool. But so Yellowstone is infinitely cooler. However, Yellowstone's feature attraction is Old Faithful, which I've said many times in this podcast, I traveled to with this like grand vision of what it would be. Uh-huh. And it is essentially a little gurgling steam geyser, just and it goes down. And you're there with a bunch of other people. There's a big countdown. So it makes you feel like, oh, a nuclear bomb's going to be dropped. This is going to be incredible, you know? Uh-huh. And 10, 9, you're chanting along with all these people and it gets to the bottom, 0. And it goes, and then you're just like, that was the main thing. And all of Yellowstone, which is gorgeous and immense and has so much stuff going on, that's the one thing that everybody tells you you're supposed to go do? You should go do anything but that.
It's not my favorite part of Yellowstone, but I will say ice cream there
you
is
like
great.
I was going
to
say.
So it doesn't even matter to me. Like, what happens? I'm just sitting there on the bench like, hey, it's another 15 minutes. Well, that doesn't matter.
That's another scoop of Ben and Jerry's for me.
Great. What am I waiting for? Just another scoop.
I don't like how you travel because you always just find where
I go
the ice
hard
cream is.
On ice cream, and Old Faithful in Yellowstone has the best ice cream.
Yeah, you have told me that before. Here's the problem, though.
I've tried all the ice cream in Yellowstone.
When people travel around and they come back, I like getting a gauge of what the destination was like. I go, oh, how was Mount Rushmore? How was this? How was that? Your perception of everything is always skewed because no matter what, you're like, oh, yeah, Midland, Kansas, it's great. There's this dairy there that serves a once-in-a-lifetime cookies and cream. And I go, well, what else is there there? You're like, I don't know. I blacked out. Like, I got dairy belly for days. But you can't give a good recap of whatever the vacation was. You know, like, you go to Hawaii, and you come back, and I go, how was Hawaii? Well, was surfing this and that? And you're just like, well, there are 3 different kinds of ice cream I had. A raspberry sherbet. It wasn't as good as the BYU creamy.
No, what I get down in Hawaii is like the Dole ice cream. It's Dole flavored.
D-O-L-E?
D-O-L-E, yeah, the brand. And it's like pineapple. You get the tropical
flavors. I thought
flavors.
You were saying that the brand itself was a flavor. I'm like, how is it a Dole flavor?
No, they have Dole branded
It tastes
ice
like
cream
a Dole executive.
There.
Really?
It's so cool. Oh my gosh, don't even get me started.
See, this is the problem. This is proving my point.
Have you ever been to Beaver, Utah?
Have you ever been to Hawaii? They have Dole flavored ice cream.
Beaver, Utah has this new, like, really nice establishment.
Of course I've been to Beaver. It's the land of four seasons. I've been there plenty of times. I've experienced every season
You can
there.
Buy cheese curds there, and you can buy ice cream there now. That's unbelievable.
Imagine
Beaver, Utah. Like, it's worth the trip just for the ice cream.
Imagine making a trip to Beaver to get ice cream. I'm not saying that ice cream's not good. Just imagine.
I actually do that.
I know you do. Well, I'm saying this to everyone else. I'm not saying it to you.
Hop
I know
in,
for
kids.
Fact.
You know where we're going.
Hop in. We're driving 2.5 hours south one way to get a little Dole-flavored something. That's crazy, dude.
Okay. That's what's happening today in the Beehive. And now, no baller.
So, Clint, as you mentioned at the top of this show, you know, you think the Jazz got screwed last night. Now, full disclosure, I have not watched last night's Jazz-Sixers game. I watched the extended highlights, I looked at the box score, and I followed the analysis and talking points coming out of the game. So there are two of them that really stuck out to me that kind of extend beyond the scope of this game, which are what we're going to talk about today. First thing is what you brought up at the top of the show, which is refs are bad, the refs screwed the Jazz, the refs screw the Jazz. This is kind of something that's been going on. So I want your take, because it sounds like you have watched the game, correct?
Yeah.
So.
Who do you think you're talking to?
Who do you think you're talking to? I watch every Jazz game. I've just missed the last six, but I watched last night.
Who do you think you're talking to?
So I find this fascinating because there's not a fan base in the league. A small market, big market, doesn't matter. Every single fan base always thinks that the referees are against them, right? And in some strange level, it almost might be true that the referees are somehow against every single team in every single game. If you watch a game through the prism of either team and you go, all right, I'm just going to pay attention to calls that go against this team, you know? So last night you could do it for the Sixers or the Jazz. Again, this is not a game I watched, but this is just an example. You can always watch the game and be like, man, the reffing was really bad. Okay, it probably favored Philly last night, but here are these 10 calls that I can recall where Embiid did this and they could have called this differently, this and this and this. And it always gets to the inevitable destination of, if you watch a team every night, you will just remember all of these things. Like, I watch every single Colorado Avalanche game, which is my favorite hockey team, and I'm like convinced in my mind, I go, I can't believe it. The Avalanche, like, they get bombed by the refs in every game. They have to be amongst the bottom. They have to be the last place team in the league when it comes to getting favorable calls from refs. And then I watch other teams when I bet on them, and so I view that in the same way that I view the Avalanche because I'm really tuned into the game, and I'm just like, man, this team's getting screwed too. Then I watch the next game, and it's a completely different theme, and I go, man, the Blue Jackets get screwed by the refs too. And you get at the inevitable destination of just like, I think the refs are actually just pretty bad. On the one hand, they're bad in general. On the other hand, it's very hard to make calls for a human being in a game that has physical contact on every single play, especially in a game like basketball, where there's so much nuance between what constitutes a foul, what's a block charge, blah, 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 all those things, right? You can get a game where it's like, if you touch Donovan Mitchell, that's a foul. And now the Jazz are humming on offense and that dictates how the game is played. The next game, it's like, oh, we're okay with a little bit more physicality. And you go, oh, well, they're knocking Mitchell off of his spots. And now he has a bad shooting night and he's turning the ball over and he's frustrated. And he's getting kicked out. It's just one of those things, right? So first, I want your take on this conundrum that everybody finds themselves in, which is my team is always screwed by the refs. Jazz fans especially are very mad about last night's game. Go.
The Jazz legitimately were screwed last night.
I hear last night was a very, very, very badly refed game. That was my takeaway coming off of
no
reading stuff.
There's no question about it. There are tons of terrible calls. It was insane.
Do you feel like the Jazz in general are...
Yes.
Okay.
And I feel like the Jazz get no respect nationally. Here's an example.
What do you mean by that? Do you mean reffing-wise?
Yeah, okay. Here's what I mean. No, I don't mean reffing-wise.
Okay.
But I don't think they get respect from the refs. I don't think Donovan Mitchell gets called like LeBron James gets called or Steph Curry gets called or these other folks, right? Here's what I think. When I say that the Jazz don't get any respect nationally, what I mean is there was a headline on ESPN, NBA top headline, said streaking Lakers take on whoever they were played last night. Streaking Lakers. They'd won two games. They're 5-5 in the past 10.
I'm assuming they meant streaking the other direction.
Streaking Lakers. And then the Jazz, it's always like, oh, you know, Luka tried his best, but the Jazz beat the Mavs.
Yeah, I
hate it.
I don't fully disagree with you.
Streaking Lakers two games is not a win streak.
No. I'm not arguing in that point. Here's where I always take umbrage with stuff like that, because everybody always thinks their team is marginalized. And if you actually are like looking for any type of headline, especially on a website or a television network like ESPN, you can always find that stuff in spades. Like, you can tune into any of the dog shit programming that goes on during the day on ESPN. And like, the Jazz will be in the midst of all of these streaks and they're out of their minds and this and that. And like, the talking points are always, Shaq said that Donovan Mitchell's a terrible player. Can you guys believe this? And the discussion is suddenly like, oh, what do you feel about how media members treat players now? And the whole conversation is completely warped away from what the conversation probably should be if you care about sports, which is just like, okay, if we want to talk about Donovan Mitchell's game, which we are actually going to get to here in a second, like, there's a lot of very interesting discussion that can occur around his play and what needs to be better and what is good and all that kind of stuff and what is reasonable to expect from a player that's supposed to be the best player on a team. And instead, like, a lot of stuff will always just get sucked up into the sports media machine and spat out into this like bastardized version of a talking point or a discussion. And so I do agree with you when you say it sucks for the Jazz, because a lot of the national coverage is always that bastardized version that I'm talking about. It's very rarely just like, the Jazz are playing well. Do we think that there is going to be a separation from the Jazz in the playoffs in years past compared to this year? Like, that's an interesting discussion.
Here's
we can have
thing.
That.
They're not just playing well. They have the best record in the NBA.
Right.
Normally, the team with the best record in the NBA gets more coverage than the Jazz are getting.
So, well, that's where you kind of lose me, though, because in the past, so here's a good example. I want to say 2016 or so, whatever the year is that the Hawks won 60-some-odd games and were the first seed in the East. Like, the talking points from that season were the exact same as the Jazz are doing now, which is just like, it's kind of unfair that whenever anybody mentions the Hawks at that time, which again, were like a 60-plus win team who's out of the blue, like Budenholzer was coaching and they had a bunch of all-stars, even though their team wasn't that good, blah, 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 blah. And everyone was like, why when we talk about the Hawks, is it just like, ha, this team's kind of a flash in the pan. Let's actually talk about LeBron because he's in the East and we know he's just going to wax Atlanta in the playoffs. Like, the Jazz are getting the same short end of the stick this year. Which is,
yeah, but the Hawks weren't the best team in the league. They didn't have the best record in the NBA in 2016. That would have been the Warriors.
Yeah, but they had the best record in the East. It's the same.
It's
the same
record
concept,
in
though.
The East.
When you're
the
16th,
best record in the NBA, that's
right,
a big deal.
We're getting lost.
That's a big deal.
We're getting lost. The main point is, I do think there are a lot of people and fans, regardless of the team. I promise you, if you go to any place in America and you go, do you think that your team, when it is good, is covered fairly and normal by national media? Like, 95% of those people who are not fans of Los Angeles or Boston or like maybe two other teams, they're just going to go, yeah, we don't get covered fair. We get covered like the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, but the Milwaukee Bucks, who, you know, had the best record last year, they got great coverage, and they're a small market team.
See, but you say they get great coverage, like, not perceiving it like you do with the Jazz. You are going to pay way more attention to the Jazz. You follow the Jazz much more closely than the Bucks. If you were a Bucks fan and you were paying day in, day out attention to coverage, you could find something every single day with ESPN. You could find a Stephen A. Smith talking point. You could find how they lead SportsCenter after they beat LeBron, but the actual entire discussion after the game is what's wrong with LeBron and why aren't the Lakers playing better and that kind of stuff. The exact same things that happened with the Jazz. Like, I think you only are perceptive of it because it's a team that you follow closely. Whereas I'm saying, if you followed any specific team very closely, you would always pick up on those same things that get talked about in the national media.
It's bullcrap, dude.
It's bullcrap.
We get no respect from the referees. We get no respect from the media. Meanwhile, the Lakers win two games. ESPN calls them streaking. The streaking Lakers! Two wins and you're streaking? 5 out of 5? You're 500 over the past 10 games, the Lakers are.
I have a much more interesting topic of conversation.
Yeah.
And it comes from last night's game. There was a tweet thread. It comes from Dan Clayton. He's the managing editor of Salt City Hoops. He's my favorite Jazz follow on Twitter. Very good analysis. Okay. Gives me a lot of stats.
Part of the Beehive family.
Okay. So I was just kind of going through stuff after the game to get a better sense of something that I hadn't watched, you know? So I come across this tweet thread from him where he's talking about Donovan Mitchell. Okay, so I just actually want to read you part of it, and then we're going to have this discussion, okay? So here's how it begins. Again, this is from Dan Clayton, the managing editor of Salt City Hoops. Jazz were up 114-109 with 2 minutes to go, largely because Mitchell had been making the right plays, including 7 points scored and 5 points assisted during a 22-14 Jazz search. At that point, they were 91.3% chance to win per in predict. Here's Mitchell's next 7 minutes, and then in parentheses, brace yourselves. So he goes on to describe the last 2 minutes of regulation and 5 minutes of overtime on a per-possession basis, 4 possessions that Donovan Mitchell uses, okay? You follow me? So then he goes on to say, so to recap, this is after he's described every possession. Mitchell plays brilliantly, puts Jazz up by 5, almost have it in the back. Then he goes 0 for 10 with 2 turnovers, 2 free throws, 1 assist for a 3, and gifts the opponent 2 points in a still winnable game, right? Which now this generates a discussion of just like, okay, half of the people who are commenting and coming into this are going, well, you're just being a hater. You just say Don Mitchell's bad in crunch time, and now we're mad about this. And then the other half are going like, Donovan Mitchell, oh, I mean, he's way bad in crunch time, and he always has been, and he's just and there's no room, which again, this is the internet, so this is why we're going to talk about it on the show. There's no room for nuanced discussion, which his original point, like all these things are true, right? And I like the idea of just going, hey, we live in a world where it's very rarely a black and white discussion when it comes to anything, but really when you get into an individual's performance within a game or a season or a career, it's very rarely this guy's good, this guy's bad, this guy's winner, this guy's loser. You guys know this from listening to me on the segment. So he goes on and gives another tweet, which is Donovan Mitchell uses 42.9% of Utah's clutch possessions. Tonight, referring to last night's game, it was actually 56%. That's cool that he wants to be that kind of player, but nobody with even 25% clutch usage has as low a true shooting percentage as he does in those situations, 38%. His clutch play so far this year has been, in a word, bad. He goes on to say, you know, this sample size, it spans 15 total games. The Jazz are 8-7 in those games, which speaks to a larger issue if you're talking about the Jazz in a grander sense of, like, how do you compare against contenders? Do we think this team is a contender? Blah, 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 blah. Okay? So this is one of... This is probably the most interesting discussion surrounding the Jazz, and has been for the last few years, which is, if you get this team, or if you get a team in place that now the Jazz are realizing they've become this season, which is predicated upon ball movement, predicated upon having a lot of skilled individuals that are able to shoot, built around Rudy Gobert on defense, Rudy Gobert rim rolling on offense with that spacing thing. Like, what can that team be? First of all, now we're seeing like, oh, they're capable of having the best record in the league at the All-Star break. How that translates to the playoffs, we'll see. You know, that's a discussion for another time. But we're seeing already the fruits of those labors from the front office and from the team putting in time and work, right? So then you start, once you've seen that in place, you go, okay, now that you ascend and engage with the Jazz as a legitimate team, and you start comparing them to other legitimate teams, you go, what is the separation between that person or that team and my team? And so you always will arrive at the inevitable place in a star's league of what does my star do versus what does your star do? And that really, really narrows down in what does my star do in crunch time versus what does your star do in crunch time? Now, again, the topic is, or the conversation is never as simple as this particular discussion. You have to go through all of these different hurdles to get to the point where it matters how your star is consistently performing in crunch time versus your star, okay? The Jazz view themselves as a team like that, and their fan base definitely views themselves as a team like that. So now you get a discussion like this, which again is very interesting. And so I'm going to get your thoughts here on this in a second, because when Mitchell comes into the league, he shows enough promise out of the gate. Like you and I, that was the first year that we started going consistently to every game, right? And we're like, man, this Mitchell guy is crazy. Like, who could have ever, what's going on with this? And over the course of the season, you see him adding small pieces to his game, and you go, man, this guy, like, he's on a cool trajectory. That year, his rookie year in the playoffs, they play Oklahoma City in the first round. Like, if you remember, Mitchell had a big-time coming-out party. That's probably the first time nationally when everybody goes, what could this guy be? Like, this guy's a blossoming star. The question now is just where within the hierarchy of stars will he be? And so then you're riding this fluctuation for the next few years where you go, okay, I want a little bit more in this area. He's improved in this area, which I like. But once you engage with a player as a star, the vast majority of times, like almost everybody except for very, very, very few, and I'm talking like LeBron and Durant level players with very few exceptions, you're always nitpicking. You're always going, I just wish they were better in this area. I wish they were better in this area, right? And Mitchell, it seems unrealistic to expect him to be LeBron or Kevin Durant, right? But then you're going, okay, where could Donovan Mitchell actually ascend to as a player? And What does that mean for the Utah Jazz, who are in need of a star who can go against other stars? Again, once they become as good as they become, okay? So now Mitchell, the next few years, he's riding this fluctuating curve, which is he's added some, he's not added some. He struggled against Houston a couple years in the playoffs. What does that mean? Oh, last year against Denver, like, he has one of the all-time offensive series we've ever seen from a guard. Him and Mitchell put on a show that we're just going like, what does this mean for these guys moving forward? Murray's now taking a step back this year. I think Mitchell, while he's not playing at that exact same level, because that would be impossible, I do think Mitchell is still on an upward curve, right? Which is like, okay, that's another stepping stone, and he's proven in a playoff series multiple times he can be very good and very efficient scoring the basketball in crunch time. Now we're at the point that I always struggle with of what is realistic to ask of a player and what is realistic to expect of a player, okay? Because from my side of the fence, I look at Donovan Mitchell, who is a shorter guard, and it's very, very, very hard to go toe-to-toe with, like, the very best crunch time stars in the league, especially in the course of a playoff series, when you're a smaller guard. Again, we also have information and stats from the past. Like, it's 1 year ago that Donovan Mitchell went out of his mind in a playoff series, so I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth, right? It's also very hard to every single year going to the playoffs say like, hey, and in the regular season to what Dan Clayton's talking about, it's very hard to say, Donovan Mitchell, in crunch time, we need you to use the majority of our possessions and also use them at a very efficient rate and do so in a manner that is like going to make us the best team in basketball. So now we're at the precipice, not the precipice, but we're just at this point that like, I'm always kind of uncomfortable with, because I can't make up my mind of like, is it reasonable to say, Donovan Mitchell, I need you to be a second team or first team all NBA player, and that's how the Jazz are going to win the title? Because if that's what your entire team is built around, that seems a little bit unrealistic to me. On the other hand, you always want to be driving a team and going, you need to get better, you need to get better, you need to get better. And the Jazz, to realize their full potential, like, that probably does mean that Donovan Mitchell has to realize his full potential, whatever that may be.
Donovan Mitchell has second team potential.
Okay, and I don't disagree with that. At the same time, it's kind of weird, like, watching the ebb and flow from season to season. We kind of lived, they're two very different players, so like, I'm not drawing a comparison between them, but we lived the same ebb and flow with a player like Gordon Hayward, right? Which is, he came into the league, he showed promise, not as much as Mitchell out of the gate, for sure. But he showed some promise, and we're like, okay, whatever. And as the seasons went on, we're like, okay, this guy's pretty good. By the time he was there in his final year with Utah, we go, this is an all-star level player. If he had stayed with the Jazz, how realistic is it to look at Gordon Hayward and go, we want you to be the guy, you need to be better in crunch time, you have to score at a more efficient rate in these with these possessions at the end of games and close games? Like, there are very few people who I feel comfortable just saying the team will be at its best, but you just have to be so, so, so good. And that's the only avenue that this team is going to reach that potential. That's like, if I look around the NBA, that's less than 10 people. And Mitchell maybe is on the edge of that. I don't know. At the same time, I struggle with how harshly do I need to grade Donovan Mitchell, and how much should I be expecting out of him as a crunch time player? I don't know.
The only thing I'll say, and I think Clayton's right, but he was fouled on a lot of those.
Okay.
And Ben Simmons fouled him, particularly at the end, and they didn't call it. He's not treated like a superstar, like LeBron is, or Steph Curry is, or Dame Lillard, or even Luka, or anyone else who's around. He's not treated like that from an officiating standpoint. And he's not treated like that from a media standpoint. And he absolutely is a superstar in the league.
Well, like, those people you said are on a different tier in my mind from Mitchell. Like, that's the elite. And I think that's part of the discussion that's going on, is just like,
I think Devin Booker gets treated like a superstar, and I don't think he's better than Donovan Mitchell.
Okay, like, that's a comparable level of star right now. With Mitchell, I don't know. I don't know. This is, again, one of those gray areas that I'll just, like, sit and think about, and I don't have fully formed thoughts on it. I just like talking about it. And I also like hearing other people talk about it and go, look, there's no, like, hard line answer to this. Is Mitchell good sometimes in crunch time? Yes, we've seen him be very, again, there are two playoff series against Oklahoma City and against Denver. He was great in those series. And then we've had other instances, this season is a good example where he has not been good in crunch time. Like, there are statistics that Deion Clayton is using that back that up. The answer is probably somewhere in the middle. And again, this is another thing that I always will talk about with the Jazz. Like, the Jazz at their absolute best and fully formed peak with the current vision of the team is that usage of Donovan Mitchell in crunch time is ideally dispersed a little bit more. You know, when you have crunch time players that you go, look, I'd like to give Conley a few more possessions in crunch time, run out of the pick and roll. I don't have a problem with giving Jordan Clarkson the ball a little bit more in crunch time, or whoever's in there. Like, if Ingles is playing at the end of the game, let's run him in pick and rolls. Is it a fair criticism to go to the Jazz and say, hey, I don't think it's fair to expect Donovan Mitchell to use 50% of your crunch time possessions efficiently? Like, that's a hard ask of anybody. That's a hard ask of Kawhi Leonard and LeBron and all these people. Everybody is going to need help at some point. Like, what is the balance that you need to find as a team? I think that's the biggest question the Jazz should be asking themselves and going, we need to find a balance between how much Donovan Mitchell is needed in crunch time, and then once he is needed, what do we need to do to put him in the best situation to succeed in those possessions?
Well, it's fascinating because as a fan and somebody who was rooting for the Jazz last night, I wanted Donovan to take the final shot in regulation, and it was, in fact, Conley, and he missed it.
And so
it's fascinating.
That's another great point. Like,
I wanted Donovan to take the last shot.
That's another fantastic
point. You want your best player to take the last shot.
If you polled every Jazz fan and said, you actually have to be true, even people who are hating on Donovan for not hating, but just saying, like, he's not as good in crunch time as we would like. If you pulled all of those people and said, who do you want taking the final shot in this team? I can assure you 100% that everybody is choosing Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
So it's the balance. But that's what comes out of a game like last night, and that's what's coming out of a season right here. This is the kind of discussion that I really like. And as long as it's not just like, oh, let's go on Twitter and be angry in these comments about it, I think there's a lot of very interesting discussion that comes from this Mitchell and Utah Jazz conundrum, and especially when it pertains to crunch time.
Donovan Mitchell is a superstar. The Jazz have the best record in the NBA. They should both be treated as such. That's my point.
There you go.
We get no respect, like Rodney Dangerfield. No respect.
I don't know who that is.
No respect. All right, let's get to we talked to a musician today.
Yeah, we're covering all the bases. Mount Rushmore, Utah Jazz, musician.
Nick Anderson from Spanish Fork, Utah. An excellent, excellent, excellent musician. I talked to him. I sat down with him, then he played a song for us. You're going to watch that now. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Rags. We're here with local musician Nick Anderson. Nick, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
So good. You like how I called you local musician?
Yeah, that's a cool title, I think.
Yeah, you're a local musician. So, where are you from?
Spanish Fork.
Spanish Fork, Utah.
Yeah, grew up.
84660.
That is the zip code.
Exact same as me.
Wow. Yeah, I went pretty much my whole life up until high school after I graduated, then left for college.
What year did you graduate?
2010.
Okay, so I'm 7 years older than you.
Okay.
We're just going to age each other right on air, let everybody know. But you're a Don. That's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Spanish Fork Dons are amazing.
They're still the Dons, huh?
We're still doing. Oh, of course we are. That'll never. For some reason, I still have like Spanish Fork pride. Yeah, we're the Dons, dude.
Yeah.
How long have you been playing?
Gosh, I probably started learning guitar like 6th, 7th grade or something. My brother, all my older brothers played before I did, and they did not feel like teaching me, and so he just taught me how to read like tabs, guitar mm-hmm. tabs, and then gave me like the guitar tab book for Weezer's Blue album, and it was just like, just learn all of these songs. So that's what I did. So by like 8th grade, I could play like every Weezer song that had been released up to that point, and nothing else.
That's awesome.
So that's how I learned how to play guitar. I still know a bunch of Weezer songs.
Weezer's great.
There's nothing wrong with Weezer. I stopped listening to them after.
I listen to them every day.
After like their first 4 albums, every day.
I wake up to it.
Wow, yeah.
I wake up to Weezer.
That's like a great way to start your day, man, for sure.
So what, you learn Weezer, you're going through, you're learning the tabs. What made you decide, like, I'm going to go all in on this thing?
I don't know if I've gone all in.
I'm going to convince you to go all in right after.
It's still a huge part of my life. And I continue to play and write my own music now. And I've dabbled in all sorts of different things, but I don't know if I ever even considered like being a career musician as an option. I was like, oh, that's not a thing that's going to happen for me. I think I just knew. But who knows? Maybe I'll just...
You should go all in.
I'll go all in.
What are you afraid of?
Well, not having enough money to survive, probably. Yeah,
money.
That's not a realistic thing, is it? You know, to worry about that.
It would be. It is probably not the best idea to go all in the midst of a pandemic where no one can get together in person.
That's true. Yeah.
And you're trying to go to be a live musician, but yeah, do it anyways.
It complicates things a little bit.
Just give it a shot. So. You've put out an album, though. I mean, you write your own songs. You've put out your own album.
Yeah.
What's that process like for you?
Gosh, I guess it just kind of depends where I'm at the time and what I'm doing. Recently, I just felt the musical inspiration I needed, I guess, to sit down and write a bunch of music. And it all came out as, like, depressing country music, which I had never really dabbled in as a genre or anything like that. And so, yeah, just recently I put out a small EP soon to be on Spotify and streaming services. There's a little plug there. But when it wants to happen, it'll happen and I'll sit down and work on it. And sometimes there's huge gaps where I don't do anything musical. So it's I don't know, every project is very different from the one that came before it, just because there's, I think, pretty big gaps as far as where I'm at in my life or what I'm interested in, even between each project.
Are you happy in the gaps or are you sad in the gaps? Because it feels like sadness might bring it out more.
Yeah, I think for sure. If your life is good and you're content,
no need.
Yeah, I don't, that Pharrell song that's literally just about being happy, that's where did that inspiration come from, man? Like, that's how do you do anything creative when you're not just a tortured soul? So I guess maybe it's just when I'm feeling real low that I'll turn back to music. I don't know.
That's amazing. I'll tell you, like, life is full of sadness, so you're gonna have more music in you. Like,
yeah,
you will be sad.
Yeah, I love when terrible things happen to me, so I can have just an ounce of inspiration.
My main point
still.
Is, like, you're going to be sad more than you're going to be happy in your life, so you're going to be able to produce some great music.
Yeah, ideally.
Life is sadness.
Life is pain. Yeah, that's my mantra, really.
So it's sad country music, which I love.
Yeah.
Is this, like, the first, like, time you've gone towards that genre?
No. When I was learning guitar post Weezer phase, I started making a lot more music that was very, like, folky, singer songwritery. I mean, it's trash. I'm glad that it's not out on the internet available anymore. That was, like, the natural course of me learning guitar and then trying to write songs was, you know, one kid and one acoustic guitar or something like that. And so I think it still came out very, like, depressing country, you know, with an angsty high school twist on it, for sure. And then as I kind of dabbled in a lot of different things, and somehow it brought me right back to, I guess, my roots writing.
Listen, you're from Spanish Fork, Utah. You're eventually going to start playing country music.
Yeah, it all makes sense now, you know, growing up in Spanish Fork and... I'm just returning to my true, authentic self.
A Don.
Yeah.
Once a Don, always a Don.
Always a Don. Yeah.
So who are your inspirations?
Musically?
Yeah.
I don't really know. Because I still don't listen to a lot of country music. I kind of rejected it even. Growing up in Spanish Fork maybe helped that.
Mm-hmm.
But modern country music just never held my interest. I thought it was really corny. And then I think it was probably, like, my senior year of high school. My brother randomly started listening to, like, Hank Williams around me. And so that was, I was like, oh, this is, like, where country music should be.
That's the good stuff.
Yeah. And so I kind of dived after that into more of, like, that era of country.
Merle Haggard, yeah. Willie Nelson.
Yeah, and that, I think, just felt a lot more authentic, yeah. A lot of that older stuff. And very, I mean, like, music recording at the time wasn't, like, super top-notch, and so a lot of those old songs are, like, very lo-fi, and I don't know, it just felt more honest. Hank Williams, also a tortured soul, not yeah. a happy person.
Yeah.
And so, like, that very dark, kind of depressing, but still, like, had, like, pop value, you know?
Yeah.
And so I really appreciated that era and that style of country. And so that's probably what you'll hear a lot in my own country music, is that type of, like, I don't know, just an acoustic guitar and some slide guitar and things like that, from that era, I guess.
Hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How about cooking something up for me?
Yeah,
is genius.
Yeah, he's got a great
That's
one
genius.
About Move Over Little Dog, the big dog coming in, about his wife locking him out of the house and changing the locks or whatever, and so every verse ends with him telling the dog to scoot over so we make room in the doghouse for him. He's got a lot of just great, you know, and they're not necessarily always happy things, but he always makes it real
well,
catchy.
Didn't he die when he's like 29? Did he even get to 30?
I don't know for sure.
Which is weird, because when you think of him, you think of, like, it's an old soul.
Yeah.
Hank was an old soul.
Well, and he has a whole, you know, multi-generation legacy now with all the Hanks coming after him. So he made his mark for sure.
And his son. You got Junior. Yeah. I've never listened to Junior's music, though.
Hank Junior, and then there's Hank the Third, I think, who went a little Whoa. More, like, outlaw country type stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, like, several generations came after that.
But modern day folks, what about, like, a Sturgill Simpson or a Tyler Childers? You ever listen to any of those folks?
A little bit. He was a country guy. Was it Sturgill? He did a whole album that had, like, an anime that went with it.
That could have been Sturgill. Tyler did some animation music video. I don't know.
Yeah, so I like to see people that are in modern country that are still trying to break the mold yeah. and push things. And I fully expect to get rejected by anyone who, like, digs contemporary country music.
Well, who cares?
Yeah. It doesn't matter to me, but I think that there's a lot of great, like, indie country out there. Yeah. People are doing really cool things, that just haven't quite broken into the mainstream.
What
yet.
Is, like, a mainstream country? Is it, like, Florida Georgia Line?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Something like
trash, dude, trash. Like, what?
Pontoon boat.
Maybe
songs,
it's derogatory, but they call it hick hop or sometimes because it's
yeah.
They do a little bit of rapping. There's some
yeah.
you know, some drum machine beats behind that.
I feel like you
got
to be really hot to do it too. You know, the only thing that plays, like, a role.
Yeah, there are not very many ugly country musicians, I think, if any, that
You've
are that are making lots of money.
Be hot.
Oh yeah.
You gotta be way hot.
I think there's a definite bias.
There's the guy who does the backwards hat and he's singing all the time. He's like an American Idol judge or something. He's like super famous, but he's like,
is it the one
the
married to Christina Aguilera or
that one too?
Yeah.
That's Blake Shelton.
Yeah.
Blake Shelton.
Yeah, they're all he was hottest man of the year one year or whatever.
Wait, is he married to Christina Aguilera? I don't think he is.
Gwen Stefani. Oh, sorry.
Christina. Kelly is the country music. Kelly should be here. She's our country music correspondent.
Oh.
She knows all about country music.
You know way more than I do. I guarantee it.
Well, I'm so excited to have you play. We're going to have you play a song or two. I'm probably going to talk you into playing us too.
I can try.
Sitting on that couch, playing the guitar. Nick Anderson, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Of course.
I was at my lowest and I prayed. I never felt no heavenly helping hand. When I asked the Lord to guide me, if he could walk beside me, I never saw no footsteps in the sand. Hail, 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 Satan. When I'm down and all alone, he lifts me up so I don't feel so bad. Hail, 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 Satan. like the only friend I've got. 'Cause I never saw no footsteps in the sand. I've never been as blue as I feel now. And I feel like no one else will understand. But with this whiskey inside me, and Lucifer to guide me, I'm finding ways to raise some hell again. Hail, 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 Satan. When I'm down and all alone, he lifts me up so I don't feel so bad. Hail, 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 Satan. Feels like the only friend I've got. 'Cause I never saw no footsteps in the sand. No, I never saw no footsteps in the sand.
Thanks.
I love that song.
It's one of my favorites, I think.
Nick Anderson, Spanish Fork Don, sounded amazing.
That was sweet.
We gave him a guitar, one of your guitars.
So first of all, fantastic rendition of a song. I love that dude's voice.
Oh, my goodness.
I wasn't here for the interview. I'm the person who plays guitar in this office. I have three guitars here. Uh-huh. Let's be known. Somehow you guys chose literally the worst and cheapest guitar for Nick. Out of three guitars, two of which are great, dude. You think I'm just some schlub who's carrying around whatever guitars? Why did you give him the lowest guitar? I don't like this at all.
I just assume you have crap guitars. They're all crap. Just pick one. Doesn't matter.
The main point is if you can sound good with that guitar, you're balling out. So I take my hat off to Nick.
That was Nick Anderson, Spanish Fork, Utah musician. He's doing Spanish Fork proud out there, doing wonderful things. Looks amazing. He's got the look.
Yeah, that's a look you should aspire to. I'm being dead serious.
Attractive man.
Yeah, got the beanie. You need to get rid of the mustache. That's a whole other subject.
I find him attractive.
You need to learn how to play guitar.
I told him I find him attractive.
I know you did.
And it was awesome.
I know
Nick
you did.
Anderson from Spanish Fork, Utah. Just an unbelievable, unbelievable musician. And in fact, we're going to play a song, another song. I got him to do another one at the end of the show. That's how we're going to end the show today, is with a Nick Anderson song. But I do have to warn people. I'm going to warn people again at the end of the show. A little explicit, this next one that he's going to play.
Okay.
A little explicit. All right, Nick Anderson, thanks so much for coming on. And now, why though?
Disney on Ice is currently in Utah. Why though? So Clint, you have a long and storied past with the Disney with the Disney family, old Walt and whatnot, okay? I've never been to Disneyland. We actually have on our prior iteration as Why Though the podcast. We have had many a discussion, including one entire episode, about Disneyland, mm-hmm. the destination, okay? Mm-hmm. And while we were discussing this, I go, man, Disneyland's crazy. They suck all these families in. They open up their wallets and purses. They take out all their money. And you go home and you just feel like, what just happened? We went through a whirlwind. And I spent $600 on like a Mickey Mouse ice cream for my kid, right?
It's good ice cream.
And you, the number one person that I know who's traveled many a time to Disneyland, you actually married into like a Disneyland family, the stereotypical Disneyland family.
I'm in it.
It's an intense thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can attest to this more than anybody. Back in your heyday, I mean, in the throes of your Disneyland fever, you guys were going you're living in Utah. You're driving out there once every couple months.
Yeah.
Which, first of all, how can you even afford that? Second of all, how can you even say sane?
Well, Brooke has an aunt who lives close by, so you just
save money on the money.
It's really just the gas money. Luckily for us.
Again, how can you afford that gas money out to California?
It is privilege. We were privileged to be able to do that. Thanks for calling us out. Yeah, the Disneyland thing is interesting. Disney on Ice, though. I've been to Disney on Ice, and I've been to Disney on Ice in this Vivint Smart Home Arena.
Have you been just barely, or you've been in the past?
No, it came last year. It comes every year.
Not during COVID. We went into a, through a pandemic. Thanks for taking that seriously.
It came this year and last.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I take that back. They definitely
this
came.
Year and last.
So one of our
you think Disney lets COVID slow it down?
One of our producers, Weston, just went to Disney on Ice just barely. Ooh. Because he's a pervert, not because he's like a family man. He's went by himself. He's a freak, dude. He goes, oh, yeah, I got, you know, they sell the tickets in pods because of COVID. He's got his own pod to himself. He's kicked back with a Mickey churro, and he's just like, whew, these skaters, man, it's the good stuff. So here's where I take offense with Disney on Ice, okay? Again, if people want to go and spend money at Disneyland, it's their choice. It's not my money, you know. I wish they donate to a charity because that's just kind of what a person
I am. Shut up. That's so stupid.
Every time I'm like, I think I want to go to Disneyland. No, no, no. Here's $50 to go to a nonprofit. That's just how I live my life. But I, you know.
Oh, that's sick.
Morally speaking, I come from a finer cloth than most. We'll just say that.
Have you ever donated to a charity
in
your life?
No, no, no.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even know how I would do that. Here's where I take umbrage with Disney on Ice, though. Normally, you have to travel out there, so it's a big event. You know, it's like, okay, I'm ready to bite the bullet. I'm going to go on the teacup ride. I'm going to buy the Mickey steak. It's all going to cost a bunch of money. I've cut this out of my budget. It's money that I'm just lighting on fire, but I'm conscious of that, and I know it's coming.
Uh-huh.
But I know when I go home, you know, you travel back home, I can wash my hands of the whole situation. I don't got to worry about it. I can sit in my, you know, sit in my couch at home, and I go, kids, I did the good deed for the year. Don't worry about it. I don't have to spend more money on this absurd Disney fascination, okay? And then Disney on Ice pops out of the blue.
Yeah.
And now you're going, wait a second. I thought this was like a one-off. Like, it was just there. Now Disney on Ice, it's the ultimate evil. They come to wherever you are. They go, oh, you thought you got away from giving us exorbitant amounts of money for no payoff? Just so you can pretend like you love your kids? You can't show your love in any other way? And so now you're sitting at home in Utah and you go, okay, I'm away from Disneyland. Great. And your kid comes up to you. Dad, I want to go to Disney on Ice tomorrow night. You go, Disney on Ice, what's that? They go, a bunch of Disney characters that go out on an ice rink in Vivint Smart Home Arena. They skate around. You got to purchase tickets and then buy a bunch of toys and food there and give it to me because I'm a kid and I love Disney.
I wonder if we can call Vivint Smart Home Arena something shorter, like the Viv. You know, like every time we have to say Vivint Smart Home Arena, it's four words.
You know what? I do 100% agree with you.
I'm going to call Todd. Well, let's call it the Viv.
I used to be rude and I would call Vivint Smart Home Arena the Delta Center still because the Delta Center is just easier to say.
Not me. Todd's a good friend of mine.
I know.
If he puts his brand on there, I'm going to support it.
You were the one
who called the Viv.
You were the one who would step in. You go, Chris. Now, Chris, hold on.
Hang on. My friend spent a lot of money to put his name on that building.
Now, that's not how corporate sponsorship works. I demand that you acknowledge the correct name of Vivint Smart Home Arena. And you say it like that. So, okay, back to Disney on Ice. You say you've been there. Did you feel any consternation, any anger when you, a man who continually travels to Disneyland, now had something come into his own home state and you're like, I got to do this again?
Here's what I'll say. I like Disney on Ice better than I like Disneyland.
Okay.
First of all, it's only 2 hours. Disneyland, that's a few days.
Good. That's a very good point.
That's a commitment.
That's a very good point.
Disney on Ice, couple hours. Disney on Ice, you're sitting down.
Okay, these are good points.
Disneyland.
This is why I brought this up for discussion. I knew I'd get an expert's opinion.
Disneyland, you're standing in line most of the time.
Oh.
You're standing, walking around like, ugh. Come here, kids. You want to go on Toontown's ride? Something like that. Whereas Disney on Ice, you're settled. You've got a nice Coke Zero on your left hand. You've got some Dippin' Dots on your eye. I'm not afraid to get Dippin' Dots.
No. Look, some
I'll splurge for the large one.
Some of the stuff there is for kids. Not everything. They got the adult Dippin' Dots.
Coke Zero. Dippin' Dots. I'm just going down to town. And amazing athletes. These skaters.
Okay.
That's another thing you don't realize. Nobody's an amazing athlete at Disneyland. They're all schlubbadubs.
Well, how do you know that they're not amazing athletes? They never asked the people in the costumes to do any jump kicks or anything.
One time I was at Disneyland, LeBron James was there. But that's a rarity. It's rarity that, like, an actual athlete would
be there. Like, LeBron James was there just as LeBron James, or LeBron James was there as, like, Goofy, and he was doing jump kicks? Those are two very
different
things.
LeBron James is there with his family.
Okay. So they're just random athletes walking around Disneyland. But you're saying at Disney on Ice, the actual performance, are these adults or are they kids?
Oh, my gosh. They are adults. and they are spectacular. Okay. So you try putting on a Scooby-Doo, not Scooby-Doo.
I've tried.
A Pluto costume.
Whatever you're about to say, I've tried it.
You try putting on Pluto and skating around the ice one time. You couldn't do it.
No, I put on the Pluto costume at home.
These guys are doing backflips in Pluto costumes.
That's actually pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Do you think they feel a little bit diminished? Because these sound like world-class athletes.
Or diminished?
Diminished or demeaned, either one. It works nicely for the idea that these world-class athletes are sitting there and they go, I can do backflips on skates. I can speed around. I can do all these whirls and twirls and stuff. Like, in another life, I'm an Olympic figure skater. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going, look at this incredible person. And instead, they're just like Pluto.
Yeah.
Do you think they ever just take a step back and go like if we went to LeBron James... And we, and in a different alternate reality, we go, oh, we have Disney on court. And LeBron, we're going to have you dress up like Pluto or Goofy. And you're going to like dunk a basketball for all these kids and dads with Dippin' Dots and Coke Zeros. Do you think he'd sit there and be like, why am I this?
Yeah. I guarantee he'd do that. I guarantee he'd do it. He's doing Space Jam 2. What's more demeaning than that?
You think he would actually do Disney
What's more demeaning than Space Jam 2? I'd rather be in Disney on court than Space Jam 2.
I kind of like the idea. Now I'm going back on what I said.
Space Jam 2 is so dumb.
Yeah.
Has that thing come out yet?
I've never seen any Space Jam, so I can't. Oh my God. I'm assuming every.
It's all about Michael Jordan, the first one. It's about his life. And then
Space Jam is?
It really is.
Space Jam's the original Last Dance.
It starts with him in North Carolina shooting out in the backyard, Michael Jordan. And now LeBron James we gotta follow the storyline.
Space Jam isn't anything like what I thought it was.
Space Jam is my Star Wars.
Oh, okay. Now
I will nerd out on Space
now
Jam.
Now I understand the passion. I
you
get it.
Don't ruin the original.
Look. This is a whole other why, though, that I'm willing to get into, but I need to go and watch Space Jam. I can't contribute a lot here. I don't know a lot about the video.
So, Disney on Ice, so another thing I love about it is you got music. And you know I love musicals. Okay?
Okay.
And so they're dancing around. They're not just skating around, and everyone's just sitting there, and it's dead quiet. There's music playing through the speakers.
The first part sounded so much cooler. Doing a backflip on skates, everyone's dead silent. You can hear everything.
There's music coming in hot. It's so cool.
Well, what kind of music are we talking? Are we talking
Disney,
a playlist? Oh,
the
Disney
best
music. Okay.
Music. The best music. Do you want to build a snowman?
What is that?
And then you have that little snowman guy skate out there, and he's like, hey, everybody. You know, and everyone's
that's
like,
Elmo.
Whoa, it's that guy. It's so cool. And he looks exactly like, I don't know how they do it.
So
I don't know how they do it.
Do they do set pieces where it's like, we're going to...
Well,
no, hold on. Hold on.
Do they do set pieces?
Hold on now.
Do they do set pieces? That's your question.
Hold on now. Do they do set pieces that combine all the Disney people? Or is it like, here's a under the sea shenanigan thing where the Little Mermaid's there, and then we're going to... Okay, now we move them out. Now
Ariel. Her name is Ariel.
Yeah, sorry.
Sheesh!
I hate that my passion for Star Wars is superseded by your passion for Disney and Space Jam.
Ariel!
So do they combine them with everybody?
Yes, they do. That's what makes it so unique.
Okay.
It's like a mashup.
Okay.
You know the mashups.
It's like...
Where you got four songs in one.
It's like the Avengers.
Oh my gosh. Ugh. Don't we're compared to that. Avengers sucks.
Well, yeah,
Disney
it does
is
suck.
Cool.
It does suck, yeah.
Disney. When you see Pluto, Mickey, and then all of a sudden you have Ariel there. Like, what's she doing there?
Yeah, I wondered the same
You got
thing.
Beauty and the Beast there. You got Beauty and the Beast there. And Mickey Mouse is right there. That's crazy. You never see them all in one place.
You're painting a pretty good picture. I don't have a family, so it'd be weird if I went out there. And I went on the Disney on Ice website and I was browsing around, and they stress super hard. They're always like, look, this is a family event. You gotta bring a family, dude. If you don't have a family, just take a step back, chill out for a while. But you're giving a passionate... take on it's speaking to me where I go, I just want to go. I'll buy my own pod. I could sit there. I'll be behaved. I'm not going to be like the guy at the jazz game who gets way too into the jazz dancers and is giving a standing O at the end and he's just staring them down. I won't be that guy.
Yeah.
I'll just sit there and I'll enjoy what you're saying. I can get the treats and I go, whoa, what's Ariel doing? I didn't expect that. Oh, Beauty and the Beast? Are you kidding me? I'm just talking to myself.
The music is beautiful.
I'm looking around at all these families. Ariel's here too? Can you guys believe that?
The music is
Kids,
beautiful.
Kids, don't look over there. Don't look at that man. I don't
know why he's dressed like Pluto, and I do not know why he's alone.
So here's another hot take. So during the same time I went into Disney on Ice, like a couple weeks before, I went to a Justin Timberlake concert at the Viv. Okay? And Disney on Ice was cooler than the JT concert.
I mean, that doesn't
First
really...
of all, let me tell you why. First of all, Disney on Ice, 10 a.m. Perfect time.
That's badass.
Perfect time.
You should have led with that. That's the most amazing time for an event I've ever heard in my life.
If I'm in bed by 1 p.m.,
oh, dude, you're
I'm doing great.
You're living the dream.
Whereas JT, oh, he might come out at 8:30. Might even be 9.
And then the encore is going to take you past 10.
Like, why do I care about... Why am I at a Justin Timberlake concert? And why is Joe Ingles right next to me? That's another thing. Joe Ingles was right next to me at the JT concert.
I'm way less worried about Joe Ingles and way more worried about why you specifically were at a Justin
Timberlake
concert.
I was there.
Like, you just woke up and it was...
Joe Ingles, not a nice guy. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not a big fan.
That's also your hottest take of the segment.
Nah, he's fine. But I really like this start time.
Parking,
easy. I get to go with my kids. My kids all love it. Again, snacks out the wazoo. There's nothing bad about it.
Look,
there's nothing bad about it.
I'm going to have to walk back what I said at the start. I might be more into Disney on Ice than I was led to believe when researching this segment. There's another cool part. This is the last thing that I'll say on anything that I researched. And yes, I did a lot of research. I was trying to, like, I'm all...
You didn't need to. You could have just thrown it
DIY
out.
DIY Pluto costume for adult male, 34-year-old. Dimensions, 5'8", 150. So I'm on the Disney on Ice website, and there's a section, there's a tab that they're like, oh, here's a lot more just like behind the event and things to do at home. So there's this huge list. There's all these articles like you can make cranberry. What was one of the things? You can make a Captain Hook's cranberry boats. You can make Rapunzel's braided bread, under the sea coral cup. So you're making all these fancy things at home that tie into Disney.
That's so cool.
The one thing that I saw, because I watched a few of the skating highlights, and I go, man, these people are like ripped and they're doing all these sweet things. Like, I wonder what's going on there. What's part of the behind the Disney on Ice things? They give you workouts to do to be like a skater. Lower body workout,
you gotta be kidding
core
me.
Workout. So then you're sitting at home, you put on the goofy soundtrack, and you get this video going of like these ripped skaters doing like core exercise, and you fall along. Under the sea, under the sea. Like holding up one leg like a plank.
That's cool.
It's way cool. So then I'm seeing that and I go, dude, this is a great way to get everybody ripped, you know?
Yeah.
You get that world-class body you and I have been searching for. That way we'll really fit into our Pluto suits.
When I was a kid, I really wanted to be a SeaWorld trainer. In particular, the one that dove in with the killer whales and then the whale like pushed them out of their nose, you know? Like,
no, I don't know.
If you ever been to SeaWorld, they don't do this anymore because people died. But they used to dive in. These trainers used to dive into SeaWorld. And they'd get in there with these killer whales into the pool, okay? With the killer whales.
Okay.
And then they would shoot. They'd be like, oh, where'd they go? They're down there for a while. What's going on? The dude and the whale. Like, oh, this is crazy.
Oh, it's like going into the closet, like spin the bottle?
They're like, where are they? And all of a sudden.
Where's the trainer and the whale?
All of a sudden, the whale and the trainer come out in unison.
And the married.
And the trainer shoots up so high. It's so crazy.
Like, okay, that sounds cool.
No, it's way cool. So growing up, all I ever wanted to be was a SeaWorld trainer. Now that I'm an adult, all I want to be is a Disney on Ice skater.
Well, it sounds like the world-class athlete in the SeaWorld scenario is the whale. That's the one who needs the training. They need the strength to thrust a human being out of the water and toss them high in the air. The person in the air, they could just be any old schlub.
Well, they died, too.
Well, they died, too. Say again, that's my point.
They are killer whales. they're properly named.
I always find it fascinating when, like, people die doing things like that. And everybody's like, this is crazy. A killer whale killed a guy who thought it was his friend. And I'm like, huh, yeah, that doesn't sound as crazy as you're making it out to be.
Before we get to Dear Utah, here's something that's going to blow your mind.
Okay.
Disney cruises.
Those exist.
Oh, do they exist? Disney cruises. You're on a boat for 7 days and all you're surrounded by the Disney characters. What could be better?
Here's my quick question on that. Here's my quick question.
What could be better?
So probably a killer whale scenario where I like get super into that world. a cruise for me, again, I'm a single adult. A cruise, it's a little more debaucherous. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to sit down by the pool. I'm going to display the nice tan I got. Show this rock and bod off. See if I can, you know, have a cocktail in the afternoon. Splurge a little. And then I'm like, okay, where are all the single ladies here? And then I try to sidle up and I'm going, okay, this is my big week, right? That's what a cruise is.
Oh, you're such a creep.
That's what a cruise. Oh, I sidle. I never approach head on.
Just a little sidle.
So they're sitting down tanning, and next thing they'll look over. I'm right on the elbow. I'm like, so.
You see that I splurged on this cocktail?
This is a blue raspberry, but there's a little bit of vodka at the bottom. So I hear a Disney cruise, and I go, is there potential for a Disney cruise that combines those two elements? Then you get the best of both worlds. You
adults only Disney cruise.
Adults only. So then I'm like, I sidle up. Who did I sidle up to? Minnie Mouse. She's out getting the tan. I go, hey, girl, what's going on underneath that costume? You know, one of those. Just like a nice wholesome pickup line.
I don't think so.
Like I sidle up to Pluto. He's like doing the breaststroke. And the next thing he knows, I'm right there behind him, like grasping his waist, trying to push him along. Is that what's going to happen on the cruise?
That'd be cool. I hope that's what happens.
This is how I'll close it. Disneyland, no, too much. Mm-hmm. The traveling Disney circuses in all their infinite forms, a lot cooler than I gave them credit for initially.
Way cooler.
Yeah, so, my mind is being opened.
It's going to freak you out. Disney World, the best.
Oh! It actually did freak me out.
That get you?
That's the note we're going to end on. Whoa!
All right, and now, dear Utah, but first, a quick word from our sponsor, Chatbooks. Holy sweet Mary Markle. Is it Mary? Megan? Megan Markle.
I don't know. You're talking to the wrong person, dude. No, I know.
Megan Markle.
I know it's part of the ad. I don't know. I don't know who the Markles are.
Markle, she's under investigation for bullying.
For bullying?
From Buckingham Palace.
Oh, it's a royalty thing. Okay. I don't know. I've never heard that name until the chapbook's out.
I don't.
You're not talking to the right person. I tried to get you off the subject with my initial statement.
Is it Megan or Mary? No, she's nice. You should get a chapbook. Do you ever use chapbooks?
Yeah.
Like, what would a chapbook for you look like?
I don't get them for myself. I have gotten chapbooks as a gift for other people who like photographs and have
them. I know, but if you did it, like if we took the past 30 pictures on your phone, how appropriate would that be to put on your coffee table?
It would be the most profane Disney cruise you could ever imagine. And nowhere on it would there be a cruise. That's the freakiest part about my chapbook.
No boat in sight.
No boat in sight. There's a lot of me and Pluto. Me dressed up like Pluto, not even me and Pluto.
I love chapbooks.
Chapbooks are sweet.
Chapbooks is so amazing.
They are super cool, and they really do. I know it's kind of become the cliche. They actually make a baller gift.
They make a great gift. It's super simple. And for me, a guy who likes his son, Henry, I just do a lot
of
that.
That's your hottest take.
I like him. I like my son, Henry. The other three,
take him or leave him, whatever.
I have so many Henry books.
That's actually cool. Okay, this is another quick thing for chapbooks. I also like when I go somewhere that has chapbooks of people who like take cool pictures, because you can like flip through them for a long time. I go, oh, what's the story on this? Oh, that's actually cool. This is sweet. That kind of stuff.
And you can do adults only books.
Dude, think of who you're talking to.
I'm just kidding. I don't know if you can. All right. Today's Dear Utah. If you have a question or comment about Utah, email us at dearutah@thebeehive.com. You can leave us a voicemail. You can text us or contact us on any of our social media accounts at TheBeehiveHQ using the hashtag Dear Utah. If you want to leave us a voicemail, which I think is our preference.
It's 100% our preference.
It's 385-344-8011. That's 385-344-8011. Here is the tweet we got from a man named Ryan. You like Ryan?
I didn't know you wanted a response. I thought you were pausing for dramatic effect to say what the tweet was. I'm supposed to give a take on Ryan now? I don't know.
Here's his question. He says, Dear Utah, who makes the best hamburger and fries in Utah County?
Okay, first thing that pops to mind is Burger King. but it's not a burger. It's called the Chicken Tender Crisp Sandwich. It'll cost you a pretty penny. It's about $6 isolated without fries or anything. But it's got it's the 100% chicken.
Yeah.
You got a little tomato on top. You got some lettuce. There's a little bit of mayo, and then the bun. If you want to splurge, the meal costs you probably $10. You know. However, that's probably my favorite sandwich.
Don't explain people Burger King. Here's the actual true answer. I know the true answer. It's very simple.
You do. I don't know the true answer.
Black Sheep.
Oh, I do know the true answer.
In Provo, Utah. Black Sheep has the best hamburger and fries. Black Sheep is honestly the best restaurant in Utah County.
So it's funny. We had this very discussion, what, like a week or two ago, because you had gone to Black Sheep.
Black Sheep, far and away, my favorite restaurant in Utah County. Maybe my favorite restaurant in Utah.
So it's 100% the best restaurant in Utah County. It 100% does have the best burger. The catch is you can only get the very best burgers during the lunchtime.
Yep.
If you go at dinner time, it's a whole different menu.
Well, I think that's changed a little bit. You don't. There are a couple burger options on the dinner menu.
But not the full burger assortment.
I like the blue cheeseburger, but they've also got the goat cheeseburger. They got a lot of different burgers, okay?
The blue burger and the goat burger are the two best burgers you can get in Utah County. That's 100% true. I take back what I said about
burgers. You can get in Utah.
I'd like to see a fancy Salt Lake burger beat it.
Oh, Hires, Big H.
Oh, our big trick is we boil it in red wine. Yeah, we don't do that down here. We just cook a nice piece of meat. We slap
it
down.
Boil it in root beer.
It in root beer. And the real trick, we dab a little Dr. Pepper on top at the end.
Dr. Pepper gets added to everything in Utah County.
Well, that's the kick. That's our version of, you know what the real thing is? We add this super hot sauce, and that's what gives it that little spice.
Yeah.
Utah County, the added boost is like, we soak this in root beer for a week, but the real kicker is we splash a little Dr. Pepper on at the end. That's where the caffeine kick comes from. You can taste it. You can feel that. Like, you eat the goat burger and you go, whoo, you got a little extra boost.
You get that nootropics in you.
Dude, Black Sheep Cafe is baller.
Black Sheep Cafe, unbelievable. It's the best hamburger. I don't even know that I have a close second to it.
No.
Red Robin?
My close second was...
A chain?
My close second was Burger King.
A chain? Maybe the Big Mac? I don't know. Black Sheep is the best restaurant in all of Utah and certainly has the best hamburger in Utah County.
Yeah, I dare anybody to beat it.
Dare anyone to beat it. If you disagree, though, hit us up on social media. Use the hashtag Dear Utah. And Allison, our social media person, manager,
boss. Just some person? Just some person drifting out there that we don't even know? Oh, wow. That seemed like a nice title of respect.
My best friend, Allison.
My best person, Allison?
My best person, Allison. She'll tweet out how you can contact us, or you can email us at dearutah@thebi.com. Tell us who you think makes the best hamburger and fries in Utah County. If not Black Sheep, who?
Yeah.
I'd love to know. I'd love to go check it out. All right. As I mentioned, we're going to end this show with an explicit, meaning just not nudity.
Well, I can provide if necessary.
This is not going to be, this is not nude, but an explicit song. So that just means there's some swear words. So if you're watching with children right now, get out.
You're watching this on a Disney cruise, start muting.
Get out. Mute it. We're going to end it with another song by our good friend Nick Anderson, Spanish Fork Utah Don. That's the show. Signing off for Chris Rawl, Kelly Jensen, and Weston Tanner. My name is Clint Betts, and this has been another episode of The Beehive.
Well, I've gone and said too much. I fit my foot inside my mouth, and I'm feeling low and lonesome with no one else around. I've been fighting back the tears, but I guess I'll let them out, 'cause I'm getting fucked up on two-buck chuck right now, with the bottle to my mouth. I try to drown my sadness out. Only Napa's finest grapes will do. Why did I twist the knife? I didn't mean to start a fight. So I'm getting fucked up on two-buck chuck tonight. I'll throw my phone away if it takes away the pain, and I'll shut my mouth for good. that will help. 'Cause I wouldn't be here drunk if I hadn't broke your heart. And I wonder every day if we should really be apart. But I know right now that you probably hate my guts with a bottle to my mouth. I try to drown my sadness so only Napa's finest grapes will do. Why did I twist the knife? I didn't mean to start a fight. So I'm getting fucked up on two buckchuck tonight. Yeah, I'm getting fucked up. I'm getting fucked up on two buck jug tonight.
Dude, those shoes are sweet.
Yeah, they're
what kind of shoes are those?
They're made for kung fu. It's like the official shoe of Shaolin monks, dude.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Those are so cool.